Okay, this is episode 3 of the Timing is Everything Bad Timing Records podcast. Last week we talked through everything we did in the year 2014, more or less, with the exception of specifically what we were doing with Knuckle Puck. We had four releases with Knuckle Puck in 2014 that we specifically left for this episode. And we left off in November 2014 having released Kevin Devine's She Can See Me 7-inch, where we talked about the release party that we did for that and how that was sort of the kickoff to our long-lasting relationship with Kevin Devine. That's still going on right now with Devinyl Splits Volume 2. By the time this podcast comes out, we will have announced that Devinyl Splits number 8 is delayed, but we're going through, and it'll probably wind up being the same thing it was last time, where we wind up releasing 6 7-inches over the course of about 14 months, and there's a split with a different partner every other month, and that's what we're working on now. But in this episode of the podcast, we're talking about Knuckle Puck. We're talking about some other stuff that we did in 2014 to accommodate a growing record label. And we're going to talk a little bit about 2015 and get into the beginning of that year.
Yeah, 2014 is essentially the year that Bad Timing figured stuff out and kind of created infrastructure. And some of that infrastructure was just based off of the relationships we had needing more resources from us, which is something that every label or management company or any successful company ultimately goes through. So Knuckle Puck, our relationship with Knuckle Puck, and I think we'll focus at the start there, I started managing the band in September 2013 as their The Weight That You Buried EP came out. And it became pretty clear that we wanted to put that release on vinyl sometime in 2014. But before that could happen, Knuckle Puck accepted a tour to go out with Neck Deep on a tour that ended up being like 98% sold out or something in February 2014. And I, as their manager, really wanted to leverage potentially going on a full US tour and the success of that for the first time. So we very quickly approached Hopeless Records to see if we could do a split between Knuckle Puck and Neck Deep, like a tour split. Neck Deep ended up not wanting to re-record any songs, so we just licensed 2 songs from their album from Hopeless Records to put on vinyl.
And then it wasn't even really a license. Like, Hopeless Records got paid out for every copy that was sold from the Neck Deep point of view.
That's a license. That's literally a license.
I guess, like, when we license acceptance, like, we pay a certain amount of money and then we recoup profits. Like, we did not technically make...
Well, we paid up front versus on the back end to some degree, like...
Yeah, I guess, never mind. Yeah, it was pretty much licensed then.
It's a license. Yeah. And so Knuckle Puck, very quickly, we had them get in the studio and write 2 songs. I remember that being the first of several stressful Knuckle Puck need to write music sessions that I have had as their manager. I should have taken that more as a mental note then, but that's okay. And so we had this EP, the split EP, Bad Timing Records 004, come out on in February of 2014. And that was really popular. I remember I was visiting my friend Matthew in New Jersey when we put that on sale. And it was just like, you kept texting me being like, well, I think we might sell out of these really, really quickly. I believe we made 1,500 online and 250 for each band to sell at the merch table. And by the time their 25-day tour ended, the whole split was sold out. And that started a great relationship with the band that was followed up in May of 2014, 2 months later, with the release of The Weight That You Buried. And we ended up selling 1,000 pieces, or I don't know, 800 pieces of vinyl in a couple hours, which was... Essentially as successful as the acceptance release. And it was crazy because it was kind of like Knuckle Puck's coming out party of like, whoa, this is a serious band. And kind of a big, great, fantastic realization for us that we could sell vinyl successfully for a new band versus a band that had been dead for 5 years or 10 years.
And we did like a really cool screen print. Like this was definitely an exciting piece of vinyl to own if you were already a fan of this band.
We had beautiful variants. We like that was, I feel like, our first time like killing it with variants, you know?
Yeah, and we did. We made 1,000 records, but we called it a first press and a second press because we didn't really think that we were gonna blow through the 1,000 like that in a day.
Knew that we Knuckle Puck had a tour with Man Overboard and Transit and Forever Came Calling in June of mm-hmm. that year, a month later. So we knew we wanted the band to have copies for tour. So we made two separate pressings, essentially, but we printed them together.
Yeah.
And we expected to have that other... I also knew at that time that Knuckle Puck would have an August and September tour with Census Fail. So we knew that we would need vinyl for the year, and there's a very good price difference when you order 1,000 versus 500 records.
In the paper products, yeah.
Yeah, so we were just like, well, let's order another 500 and we'll just keep them until the fall. And then it also turned out that Knuckle Puck were going to be supporting Man Overboard in the fall. Modern Baseball in the fall, too. So we just figured, why not? What we did not expect is that we were going to sell 1,000 pieces of vinyl essentially in one day versus 6 months.
And it's crazy, like looking at the pressing history of this on our website right now, we did that first and second press was a combined 1,000. The third press is 1,500. And then the fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh presses have all been 1,000. By far, the highest selling piece, like the highest selling release that we've had on vinyl, 100%, right?
Yeah, it's been a great success for us and the band. It has, you know, Hot Topic at one point bought 500 or 1,000 copies. It's been well distributed through ADA. Band mm-hmm. has, you know, always sold copies on tour. It's just been, you know, kind of like what you want as a record label, ultimately. And as their other release, While I Stay Secluded, to a somewhat lesser extent, but still to a great extent for us. And those were two of four releases we had with Knuckle Puck that year. We also released a Flexi 7-inch, which is the one and only 7 Flexi that we've ever made. And then we released a second EP by the band called While I Stay Secluded in October of 2014. And we wanted to talk a little bit about that one because that was the first release that we kind of had in a very active hands-on role, and I feel like, with new music for something bigger than like the Somos Sorority Noise Split, because that was just a 7-inch. This was another 12-inch release. Knuckle Puck wrote and recorded 6 songs, and it was their last release before they went on to publicly sign to Rise Records. So we knew we needed to do a really good job, and I am managing them, and it was very important to me that we like crushed it. And this was kind of the first time where I feel like we took on more of a infrastructure around a release versus just putting something up for pre-order and hoping it did well.
We did a big pre-order for this. We had fanny packs. We had like,
how could I forget,
crew necks, t-shirts. Like, this was our like that model that Rise Records, Pure Noise Records, that all these Hopeless, that all the big indie labels do for their big pre-orders, where you can go on and you can buy any combination of products in all these bundles. We did that for this. We have never really done that since. Maybe. Like we've had t-shirts as part of pre-orders. We've had some other things here and there, but that was like the pre-order that we did that required a ton of planning.
Yeah, and on my end too, on the management side, like it was important for me to make Knuckle Puck look like more of a legitimate official band before going on to Rise, and this was a great opportunity to do so because I partnered with Thomas. We had the full like capability to make that happen, you know.
There was no singles for this. We did Oak Street on the Flexi as basically promo for the 12-inch EP.
Census Fail tour, yeah.
Yeah, and once we announced While I Stay Secluded, there was kind of a pre-order date, but we didn't release any more songs. And I remember being really mad about that, like wanting to release more and do more.
I was too. We had a real struggle. That was an early experience for me with managing the band. It was like a constant push and pull. One song actually did release, But Why Would You Care? Bedford Falls. So we did end up streaming that, but out of like, it leaked somehow. It was really weird. But we should move on past that and just say that was the first release we kind of had like a proper publicist for, but in an interesting backdoor kind of way. Knuckle Puck had already signed to Rise Records at that point, but we didn't want it to be publicly known until after they released this EP. So Rise was kind enough to let us use their in-house publicist, or sorry, their retainer publicist to do the press for this release. And it was a great thing. Like we got premieres, we did interviews, the whole thing. That was still kind of in like the Property Zach Alt Press Absolute Punk K-Day. So everything was pretty easy for us. But that was like a first experience for us working with a publicist. And also that was by far the biggest release we had ever done like mail order for at that point. Even though we didn't necessarily sell much more vinyl than we did for Acceptance, we did have these fanny packs, all this cloth stuff. I have these photos on my phone of like myself, Emily Hakes, and another friend of ours, Ben Johnson, packing just like these insane boxes that filled up this entire warehouse we were in. And we'll talk about that warehouse now too. But like,
yeah,
and this was a wacky time for us.
And even from just the pure sheer volume of vinyl that we ordered, that first press was almost 3,000 units. Definitely the biggest one-time pressing that we have done. Maybe, I guess not if you count like a double LP kind of thing, but like that was probably the biggest invoice that we've ever gotten for vinyl for a single release at one time. And, you know, there was pressure on us to kind of, you know, when you order all that vinyl, you have to make sure that you're selling it. And the band obviously was going to tour for, you know, they've been on tour forever, pretty much. And it performed well without the traditional kind of rollout that we're used to doing. We still did like the BTR standard time for the releases. We had the support of a publicist, like you said. But this really, like you're saying with the mail order, it increased what we had to do from a sheer volume perspective. And all of the Knuckle Puck releases informed the decision to leave that apartment that you were in Philly and go into a warehouse with J-Tree Records.
Yeah, and so this is like a middle period of Bad Timing's lifespan, I feel like, essentially. A professor of mine in college, Darren Walters, is one of the co-founders and co-owners of J-Tree, and a punk guy, and I was one of his punk students, essentially, alongside several members of Modern Baseball and our publicist and all this other stuff. And I was pestering him for months about licensing part of the J-Tree catalog to repress on Bad Timing Records. And eventually that snowtailed into, actually, we want to bring J-Tree back as a label, and Zach, you should label manage us. And that was a several-year frustrating multi-year arc of my life. But that also provided Bad Timing with a lot of opportunity, and we took advantage of it. So J-Tree wanted to come back to life and release new music and to do mail order and all this kind of stuff. So we moved the label from Wilmington, Delaware, where it started, to a warehouse in Kensington in Philadelphia, a really cool big warehouse, 2,000 square foot. It was super cheap. It was like $1,600 a month. It was great. And J-Tree, Bad Timing Records, Lamo Records moved in there. And then we had some, it was almost like a mini, mini, mini shitty music WeWork of managers in Philadelphia that rented some desks in there. And so basically Bad Timing signed up with J-Tree, one, to take on some warehouse space for our mail order. And then two, we actually signed our first distro deal. J-Tree at the time, and I guess still is through Epitaph, is distributed by ADA, which is one of the largest independent distributors in America and the world. And a distributor gets your physical product into record stores across the country, and also handles your digital releases. And if things are going good, it will be pitching new songs to Spotify, Apple Music, and so on. So we signed a deal with J-Tree basically in August, I feel like, of 2014. And this was another big step for Bad Timing, along with us moving out of this apartment. And then we officially hired our dear friend Emily Hakes to do mail order for us at the time. We were college students together, and Emily and I spent many a days driving after class from West Philly to Fishtown to pack mail order, do press, do accounting, and so on.
Yeah, it was kind of like the need to grow infrastructure around the label, the realization that we could not do all of these things on our own, like especially, you know, the publicity angle of it. Neither of us had an interest in doing that. The mail order was unsustainable for you on your own. And then I genuinely believe, like, without the distro, there is, you know, that's money that you're leaving on the table. If you're a label that's a certain size and you're not signing a distro deal, you can be moving product out of your warehouse into somebody else's warehouse, into Best Buy or Urban Outfitters, whatever, that that's stuff that you don't have to hold on to anymore. And we're making vinyl and immediately shipping it off to ADA, where we don't ever see it. So that was a big step for the label in terms of growing and becoming more of a mature label. The partnership
in
with J-Tree,
I was just going to say, in terms of the warehouse space, like, We spent $300 a month, which was $200 more a month than we were probably spending at the apartment. And for it, we got all this space, basically. In the apartment, we really could only have releases. In the apartment office, we could really only have releases that we knew we were going to sell 80% of their stock in the first week. You know,
yeah, we had like two bookshelves for vinyl.
Literally.
Yeah.
Actually, it was one bookshelf for us, one bookshelf for Lamo. And so we moved into this warehouse where we had not unlimited storage, but a lot of storage. And all of a sudden, we had thousands of records on our hands sitting there, whether it was going to go out to ADA or tour stock or sell on the store. So this was really beneficial for us because it gave us space to grow into and to succeed in. And then hiring Emily was kind of a realization of my time was not best spent and couldn't be spent packing mail order. And we're also happy to pay someone for it. And it made the business much more efficient.
Mm-hmm.
And Emily also handled like customer service for us. She was, and actually still is kind of like a,
third member.
Third member. And also like a, just like a great tool for us in multifaceted. She is great.
Yeah, we also hired her to do our finances, and she still does our finances. Like when we submit our stuff, go out for taxes at the end of the year. Emily has tracked each month by month,
and does all our royalties.
Yeah, all of the releases for royalties. Emily still handles all of that, and that was another thing where, you know, one of us could have done that, but the idea of one of us like having done that for the past 3 years, like we just would have messed up so many times.
Yeah, like, honestly, one, it's a job in and of itself, and we'll talk more about that in a later episode because it's incredibly valuable in a lot of ways. But so that was kind of like late 2014, early 2015, and we did eventually move from partnering with JTree to partnering with Run for Cover as my time with JTree personally ended. And I graduated Drexel and moved from Philadelphia back to New York City. We packed up our warehouse. Thomas came down and we put everything in a U-Haul and we drove all the stock up to Run for Cover Records.
Terrible day.
It's just a lot of work, you guys. Who had been a friend of ours for a long time, and to this day, from April 2015 to May 1st, 2018, Run for Cover has successfully handled all of our mail order, customer service, and also now distributes us through ADA. So we have remained a sub-distribution partner of a label with ADA this whole time.
Yep.
And while we are less busy in terms of number of releases, Run for Cover has, you know, kept up their end of the bargain and does a great job doing our mail order for us. And while we pay them maybe a little bit more of a premium, it wasn't feasible for us to stay in Philly anymore. As one, I moved out. Emily went to California after college and now lives in Brooklyn. So she was going to get out of the mail order stuff. And it wasn't sustainable for us to be in Philadelphia anymore. And Run for Cover does this as a business every day for themselves. So
yeah, there was no way that we were going to hire someone in Philly to manage that locally when neither of us were there. Like the fact that Run for Cover being such pros at this and doing this obviously on their own, and they also sub-distribute, I think, other labels, if I'm not mistaken. Like the fact that they're such pros is like, we don't have to be in Boston. Like I don't think I have been back inside the Run for Cover warehouse since we moved, all that stuff. Maybe
I was there last week, but you definitely have not been. Run for Cover also does Lamo Records. Lamo also kind of came alongside us at the same time from JTree. So yeah, our business graduated there. And I would just say overall, like doing mail order, I'm really glad we did it. I was actually talking to Tom from Run for Cover about this last week when I was in Boston. It made me know how our business operated in a more finite way, right? It's like being in the mailroom, right? It's like a cliche you hear. Like, I'm glad I did that for a year and that we had that in front of me at this office for another year.
Yeah.
But eventually, like, we understood that part of the business and it wasn't going to make our lives any better or it wasn't going to make our label any better by continuing to do it as like a point of pride. It made sense for us as a business to offload it. And our business, like, our business would not be alive right now if we had to do mail order, literally.
Yeah, we'll talk. So, we'll talk too about, like, I think more in the next episode or the following episode about, like, the stuff that happened in our lives that made it so we could not dedicate as much time to Bad Timing Records. But yeah, like you're saying, there's certain things that as the volume increases, if you want to maintain sanity, and we never had a vision of quitting our day jobs to dedicate more and more time to the label, there was no other choice. Like there's no way that we're getting warehouse space in Brooklyn just for ourselves. Like it was never going to be that big, but it was certainly big enough to bring in a partner like Run for Cover and basically turnkey operation, where we moved in all of our records and then they started doing our mail order, you know, the next week, more or less.
Exactly. And so that's kind of a mix of 2014 and 2015, but another great, great, great and continual partner for us in Bad Timing Records alongside Knuckle Puck has been Kevin Devine. Mm-hmm. And we talked a little bit about last episode how She Can See Me was the first release we did with Kevin, even though it wasn't the first release we were like talking about. But we started off 2015 essentially the most awesome month stretch of a label we ever had, right?
Yeah. Like this was so memorable. I was in Germany for like 2 weeks of this, with Katie visiting her parents.
I forgot about that. Yeah.
Yeah. And I just remember it being like we really lined up. We lined up four releases in the course of January, one a week. I don't know. We'll never do anything like that again. That's for sure.
No, but outside of like the success that Science Fiction had, I just feel like nothing can memorably like top what a like roller coaster in a purely like going up way and not coming down way this was, you know?
Yeah.
Like it was just incredible. So we had four releases in January of 2015. Mansions, Dig Up the Dead acoustic, which is like a top 10 record for me, and that I believe sold out pretty immediately. We had Kevin Devine's Brother's Blood, and while that did not sell out, we sold a shit ton. And we didn't want it to sell out because we started to get to a point to a label where like we didn't want releases to sell out. We needed to order enough so the band could take it on tour. But that release was bonkers business.
That was our first double LP. Double LP, and you know, accordingly you charge more for it. And I just remember looking at like the PayPal and being like, what is this? Like, what is
that? That was the first release we charged more than $16 or $18 for. Like, we charged $24 for that, I think, and we still do.
Obviously, you pay more for those up front, but I just remember being like, yo, we should only ever do double LPs in the future.
And the packaging was intricate too. It's a die cut release.
Yeah.
So it was a lot for us. It was like a lot of great things for us. And then the week after, basically we released four pieces of music in 4 weeks. The week after that, we released a gatefold 7-inch by Knuckle Puck called Don't Come Home, which is our first ever release. And then we also released the first Divinyl split in the end of the month with Matthew Collis from Not a Surf. It was just, and that was a first for us too, first of now only two, in which we like created a subscription thing. So it was just like an incredible start to what was an insane year in good and bad ways.
Yeah. The Divinyl splits thing too, it's worth mentioning, like that comes out at the end of January, but that involved months of planning ahead. The idea, the same thing that we're doing for Divinyl Splits Volume 2 now, 6 7-inches released every other month. So over the course of the year, you get all six. It didn't line up perfectly with that. We had delays. The sixth and final one wound up coming out in March 2016, when it would have ideally been December 2015. But I think aside from delays pretty much that were out of our hands, we did, like, in retrospect, an amazing job, I think, at creating the subscription model and kind of taking the money up front, but dividing the money up in a way that made sense for royalties, in a way that made sense, you know, even just to make sure you have enough money to ship all those records when each one comes up. It informed what we did the second time, but we did almost the exact same thing. Like, you know, it was an incredible success for the first time that we had taken on a project of that magnitude.
Yeah, it just, that month was a lot of things. There was, you know, there's like a reissue of a band that wasn't touring. There's a reissue for an artist we were about to create this really long relationship with that was touring. There was a reissue for another band. And then there's this subscription thing. Like, we did a lot of different things in that month, and mm-hmm. I think that established a lot of good and a lot of hard things for the label in 1 year. We spent a lot of time in this episode talking about, I think, kind of like building out infrastructure. And I think we'll talk more next episode of like the good and bad of that infrastructure and what it enabled us to do and things that we shouldn't have done and things that we needed to do from that.
And we're gone. 2015 wound up being like by far the busiest year that we have had and the busiest year we will ever have. The amount of things that we did this year from different angles where we went forward and did more reissues, like that were straight up licenses. We wound up signing young bands, at least two bands, which nobody had ever heard of before. Kind of the varied success that we had with these things, 2015, it wound up being like the entire lifetime, I think, of the label encapsulated in 1 year. So next episode, we can kind of walk through 2015 in more detail, talk about what went really well, like what's still going on for us kind of from 2015, and what went really poorly and things that we probably will never try again as a label.
And we're 25 minutes in now. We're going to try to keep these future episodes to 30 minutes or less to be a little easier on you. I thought this was pretty compact, actually. I'm pleased with this. like we said at the beginning of the episode, you can learn more about our Divinyl Series Volume 2 on our website at badtimingrecords.com. You can check out other releases we have out, like Mansions or Knuckle Puck or All Get Out. All Get Out just released a new song for a new record they're releasing. Not on our label, but it's a great song. You can check out a bunch of releases from them. And we have some other stuff going on this year, too. And so keep in touch with us. And we'll speak to you next week, whenever that is. That's it. I am expendable. But I guess that's just the